Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some great guests on for you. We have in the first half Mary DeMocker, and she's going to be speaking about the great outdoors, getting your children out there and families out there to enjoy it. And in the second half we have Dr. Joseph Mosquera. He's a physician and lecturer, and he's created a bilingual solution on an app to help with medical problems and prescription costs. So we're going to go to Alan with the Health First News, and when we come back we'll speak to Mary.
Unsettling experiences on social media may leave you feeling more than just antisocial. They might raise your risk for depression, new research suggests. Curiously, the reverse doesn't seem to be true. A survey of nearly 1,200 college students indicated that a positive online exchange only marginally reduced depression risk. Study lead author Dr. Brian Primack said, "We were not surprised that having negative experiences was related to depression. This is something that we hear from people a lot in their subjective experience. However, we were surprised with how there was a very weak relationship, or even none at all in some models, between having positive experiences and having less depression." He directs the University of Pittsburgh Center for Research on Media, Technology, and Health. The study findings were published June 7th in the journal Depression and Anxiety. Having tonsils removed in childhood is supposed to end chronic earaches and breathing problems. But what if it also increases risk of respiratory infections? Sean Byers, lead researcher of a new study, said, "We found that long-term risks of diseases, in particular respiratory, allergic, and infectious diseases, were substantially increased after surgery up to 30 years of age. Those respiratory diseases include asthma and pneumonia," the study authors said. Given these higher odds for certain illnesses, it's wise to consider long-term health before removing a child's tonsils and adenoids, the researchers concluded. The report was published online June 7th in JAMA Otolaryngology, Head and Neck Surgery. Treating stroke survivors' blood pressure more aggressively might prevent a substantial number of deaths, a new study estimates. Last year, new guidelines from the American College of Cardiology and American Heart Association lowered the threshold for diagnosing high blood pressure. They said people should consider treatment when their numbers reach 130 over 80 rather than the long-used threshold of 140 over 90. The new study tried to estimate what would happen if U.S. stroke survivors aimed for those lower numbers. The conclusion? It might prevent one-third more deaths. But experts stress that the findings are not definitive. They are an estimate based on an ongoing government study tracking Americans' health. The findings were published June 6th in the Journal of the American Heart Association. If you're a man and you suffer from heart disease or diabetes, stress at work may shorten your life, a new study finds. The researchers said a demanding job in which you have little or no control over your work environment is a formula that can increase the risk of dying early, whether you suffer from heart disease or not. But that risk jumped 68% for men with heart disease or diabetes, the investigators found. Lead researcher Mika Kivimaki said these findings suggest that working very hard might not be a good idea for people with serious cardiometabolic disease, such as those with diabetes, coronary heart disease, or a history of stroke. He is the chair of social epidemiology at University College, London. The report was published online June 5th in the journal The Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology.
Mary DeMocker is the author of The Parent's Guide to the Climate Revolution, 100 Ways to Build a Fossil-Free Future, Raising Empowered Kids and Still Getting a Good Night's Sleep. And we've got her on the radio today to talk about getting the kids outdoors and having fun. So welcome, Mary. It's good to have you back on the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Okay. You're just a wealth of information for inspiring the planet. How are we going to get maybe the graduates this year? What kind of gift could we give them to really help them think about a livable planet?
Well, you know, the thing that graduates really want, although they don't put it on their list, is a livable planet. They want a future. Everything that they've been working towards for all of these years is to prepare them to thrive in the world that they're going to be encountering over coming decades. But the biggest thing that's going to threaten that world is climate destruction that we, our generation, is now driving through our policies. So what we need to do is give the graduates, all children, what the scientists are telling us to give them, which is a healthy climate system so that they have a safe place to live. And that means leaving fossil fuels in the ground and embracing all those wonderful clean and renewable energy technologies that are coming online more and more and that are cheaper than ever. And it also means planting trees worldwide.
Okay. Give us some more ideas on that, leaving the fossil fuels in the ground. How do we change that and still have the lives we like?
Well, I think the key for the reason I wrote the book is that I wanted to give parents in particular, as well as teachers and religious leaders and camp counselors, ways that don't mean they have to join a group necessarily or become a volunteer or give a lot of hours, but just have short, easy ways that fit into busy lives, especially for families who are so overwhelmed now by all that it takes to raise healthy children and stay connected to community. So I have lots of chapters with ideas that are for different kinds of kids, different kinds of families and different lifestyles, and that offer ways in that may not work for everybody. So, for example, divesting is one thing that's easy to do for parents. We can make sure our credit card, for example, isn't from J.P. Morgan Chase. That's the company, the bank, that is doubling down on fossil fuels. That's pretty straightforward. It takes a few minutes over the next couple of weeks to get that moved to a bank or a credit union that invests locally or invests in clean energy. And then in terms of things we can do with our families, we can make one sign for our car or bike or apartment window or house window that really supports a candidate who's, you know, we're coming into an election season. What candidate is really standing up for your family, your community's clean water, clean soil, and clean air? We can do lots of small things like putting messages in our signature lines. We can subscribe to a free online newsletter like The Beacon by Grist or for children, Brains On. And that gives a lot of kind of inspiring news about what clean energy innovations are out there that we might not know about. And that gets us talking about it and excited about it and clear that we can move off of fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm. So, and just getting really active about walking and biking and swimming and finding ways to move without vehicles.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that is great this time of year to, you know, I'm actually looking for a recumbent bike because I actually have a lot of injuries and I've had, you know, I have a lot of metal on my spine, so I can't use most bikes. So that's my project, is to get something over the next month, a recumbent bike. And this is a great time to test bikes and look on Craigslist and other places for sales. And it's a great time for families to get out there and find those bike paths and have those picnics and find out, you know, what kind of resources there are to advocate for bike paths and really get out there walking and finding out what is the bicycle community and look like in your area. Because some of them, a lot of people don't know there are these groups called Critical Mass, and that's where there are family bicycle trips on, you know, a Sunday afternoon, and they start out at a park, for example, and go to a festival or a farmer's market and stop at ice cream along the way, and it kind of builds that community of families who are trying to both get their kids out moving and connecting with community and helping the planet.
So if we don't have that in our community, it's a good thing to start.
Absolutely. They can start one. You can start it with two other families, one other family. Just say, this Sunday, we're going to take a family ride. Here's where we're going to start. Here's where we're going to end. Don't make it a big deal. Just, you know, from 1 to 2 o'clock this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great time of year to do that and to connect with other people. And it's kind of contagious, too. If you've got a culture of bicycling in your family, it tends to inspire other people. And that's also true, actually, for solar panels. The number one reason that people get solar panels is actually because of their neighbors. So all of this stuff, this excitement about clean energy, this excitement about moving, and then opportunities that we can share with one another for moving and exploring by bike or roller skating, or, you know, there are all kinds of innovations out there for bicycles. If you're in a hilly area, there are electric assist bikes now that can help you. You know, there are so many different ways to be on something that lets you use your body to move, whether for commuting or for, you know, even a family vacation. There's a group called the Family Adventure Project online, and that's a couple that has taken their kids out on bicycle tours for their vacations since the kids were babies, three kids. So I know it's possible. We haven't done that ourselves, but it's fun to see the models that are out there for really having a fun, connecting family vacation that might be a whole new way of being, you know, immersed in nature and together with each other and empowering for children.
Mm-hmm. And economically friendly for families.
Absolutely. Especially if you have a tent. You know, you can save so much money over that Disneyland weekend or the flight to Cancun or all the kind of the bigger vacations that I don't that I'm seeing more and more, especially with older children, where people are getting on airplanes for a sweet 16 birthday party in Paris, for example. You know, I mean, really, I actually have a chapter about that in my book. When my daughter was 16, and a couple of her friends were going to Paris for their 16th birthday parties, and she, you know, we decided, well, let's just bring Paris to us. We don't have the money or the time or the or quite the support to do that just for a long weekend. But let's bring Paris to us. So we did some French movie. We went thrift store shopping, and then we went to a French cafe and had crepes, and it was really fun.
Fantastic. So you've got such great inspiration. What are some foolproof ways to get the kids off the screen and outdoors this summer?
Yes, that is a really important question, because it is becoming more and more difficult to get our kids off screens, partly because we're on the screen so much, but a lot of it is because we are treating the screens as babysitters for our kids. And there's not yet a lot of cultural support for really finding ways to get them off of those screens and outside. So here's what we did. We bought a router that cuts them off of their screens at a certain time. Actually, there are a lot of new phones now that have much better built-in controls than the past generations of phones that shut themselves down or limit the kids or, you know, when or how the phones are used. A big rule that we have is no screens in bedrooms, even for the teenagers. And that's because once they're up there, it's so easy to just stay. And it's easy not to play outside. It's easy not to interact with other people. So the other thing is, we also don't have any screens at meals. And we ourselves are pretty limited on our screens. But the biggest thing is not just to say no, but to provide a lot of alternatives that say yes to going outdoors, yes to connecting with other people, yes to playing at, you know, on a local team or at the local pool. So we did a lot of, and still do, have a lot of games and equipment that are sports equipment that are spread throughout the yard and the living room. And we have a lot of kind of a family culture of playing games over meals or playing games, you know, if the kids have been out for a movie one night, then we'll make it a family game night the next night or have friends over and, you know, basketball on the street. We have made strong relationships with our neighbors who are also Frisbee players. That's kind of our passionate, the passionate sport here. And so there's a lot of Frisbee playing in the street, and we just go next door and ask if they want to play. So to really cultivate a neighborhood culture of playing in the street, of playing in the backyards, of heading over to the park. And the other thing that we do is buy a lot of used kind of equipment for things that they might not be interested in, you know, right out of the gate. But we at Goodwill fund a badminton set. We set that up in the front yard. We've gotten tennis rackets, even though we didn't play tennis. And, you know, several times a year, they'll head down to the local university in the summer and use those cheap tennis rackets. You know, we're talking about $3 or $4 for some of these things that can kind of spark a new interest in a new sport. There's a pogo stick that we've been hearing next door for the last 2 weeks since I got it at a garage sale. So that's just something that's fun to, you know, try on different instruments, different music classes. Get some kazoos or slide whistles for the younger kids.
Mary, you're taking us back to the 1960s.
Well, you know, that's not a bad place to be when it comes to kids and outdoor play, is it?
Because no, it's fantastic. It's fantastic.
We were all outdoors.
That's right.
You know, even today, if you don't have the capacity, you don't have a yard to do that, then sign your kids up for a screen-free camp or a YMCA team or there are babysitting co-ops and playgroups for younger kids and parks and recs classes for older kids. But mostly it's about modeling that for our children ourselves. That's really key. My husband commutes to work by bicycle, mm-hmm. no matter what the weather. He puts on his rain gear. We're in Oregon where it's super rainy for 8 months of the year, and he wouldn't do without it because it's his exercise and it's through the woods, and he feels better about it. It's good for the planet. He inspires other people all the time who ask him about it around campus. They see him with his, you know, little special leg straps and his helmet. And he, you know, he's making an impact, and he's also feeling good about it. And our kids are seeing that. They're happy to be on their bikes. But you really do have to cultivate that culture within your family.
Beautiful, Mary. We're going to have to go to a quick break. When we come back, we're going to explore more ideas to get outside and really enjoy life.